Thou shalt say no.
It's only a two-letter word, but often it becomes almost impossible to pronounce it. It's among the first lessons a person needs to learn. And it's a lesson that a person must practice again and again. Failure here, sir, is moral wreckage. I must find backbone to say no when every possible pressure is applied upon me to say yes. The teenager is exposed. The pressures zero in upon youth. There are greater sales campaigns, more solicitations than at any other age level. The constant appeal is try it. You'll like it. It's not easy for a young person to say no. It wasn't easy for the young man Daniel. He was away from home. He was in strange company. His superiors wanted him to develop a pleasing personality. His employers liked his chances. There was no blemish. He was well favored. They noted that he was skillful, smart, with ability. He seemed destined for quick success until his bosses suggested he compromise his moral convictions, and that's always the test. It was there that Daniel built his future on the giant two-letter word, no. He purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. It always seemed suicide to go against the popular will. It was only a bit of music. It would be discreet. They could reserve their own private convictions. And what good would it do anyway? They were such a small group. No one should stand in the path of progress. Anyhow, we're not the majority for it. And it might be construed to be a patriotic gesture. A symbol of Babylonian pride, it would be an exchange of goodwill, of religious tolerance, a breadth of understanding. But Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego said no. Now, Mother, these Hebrew lads would never have made it had they known indulgence as infants. Discipline had been built. They had not been pampered. Their every cry had not been interpreted as a command. Their mothers had wanted 1,000 times to yield. What mother doesn't? They had found courage to say no. Three young men reflected that training. And this is what is lacking in permissive society. Parents and teachers realize they should say no, but can't find the courage to do it. And a generation is injured by this state of laissez-faire. There are commercial pressures today. We are urged to live extravagantly. Beyond our means, credit is dangled, status is exalted. We're encouraged to run before we can walk, and our resources cannot match our lusts. An inner alarm warns, but thousands plunge toward economic chaos. Thou shalt not covet is still one of the 10 rules. Open the dikes, and a flood of desire runs rampant toward thy neighbor's house, toward thy neighbor's wife, his manservant, his maidservant, anything that is thy neighbor's. You can't have law and order, mister, without the little word no. So what shall we do? Well, I offer these considerations. First, learn to respect your own judgments. It must start there. I must have courage and resolution and independence. Without these, there would be no story of Joseph. It came to pass that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day that he hearkened not unto her. He faced the ultimate in pressure. She was an older woman in a place of power, and she could do him favors. On the other hand, she had the power to blackmail him. What would be better, to lie in bed or to rot in prison? At no time did he second-guess himself. He relied upon his personal judgment. He made up his mind, if need be, to go to prison for it. He did go to prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor. Listen carefully. A man who dares not act according to his own convictions of what is right, for fear that after all he may be mistaken. I will not say that he has no regard for conscience, but this I will say, he has no confidence in conscience. And here is the dividend. A man who doth respect his own conscience may make mistakes, which the community will note, but that community will never, never question. man's motives, and even the person whom you refuse will not lose his regard for your character and your testimony. That is what a Christian athlete has to establish. You may never become the most popular man on the job, mister, but you can become the most respected man on the job, and there will always be respect for firmness and independence. These are qualities of real manhood and real womanhood. Now, second, such a posture is prudent and practical. Jesus dealt with this in his Sermon on the Mount. Let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Stay away from the gray area. Be definite. As one Major League Baseball umpire described it, this is a strike and that is a ball. And there isn't any in between. There is seduction on every hand, girl, tossed about by every wind of doctrine. And unless you have anchored and are prepared to resist, you're headed toward shipwreck. That was Eve's downfall. The serpent beguiled me and I did eat. Libraries of sorrow would have been avoided had Eve said no. Had Pontius Pilate exercised what he exercised toward the inscription on the cross at the judgment hall, that politician would have left a different record. Then said the chief priests of the Jews to Pilate, like not the king of the Jews, but that he said, I am the king of the Jews. And Pilate answered, what I have written, I have written. He needed to find that no 6 hours before. So much human misery would have been avoided by a firm stand. It doomed Balaam the great preacher, and Balak sent yet again princes more and more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and they said, thus saith Balak, let nothing hinder thee from coming unto me, for I will promote thee unto very great honor, and I will do whatsoever thou sayest unto me. Come therefore, I pray thee, curse this people. So he tried what Pharaoh and Hitler tried, and he ended the same way. He wasn't left even with mule sense. He trifled instead of saying no. Third, this is in no sense inconsistent with a benevolent and a generous disposition. I can be firm and fair. Being easy doesn't make you generous. The unjust judge that Jesus quoted wasn't generous. Lest by her continual coming she weary me. He didn't want to be bothered. These are the easy marks of life. They are often mistaken for generous people. No, sir. They only follow the course of least resistance. They are the truly selfish people. They think only of their own comfort. And there is another myth. We choose to believe and to have others believe that our willingness to say no arises wholly or chiefly from our unwillingness to give anyone pain of refusal, that it springs from benevolence because it hurts our feelings to hurt the feelings of other people. And that is how we rationalize a no position stand. Now, what kind of a human being am I that would rather see another human being finally hurt because I don't want to feel bad? I'm selfish. I'm thinking only of myself. And that's why James states, therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. No, no. Far from being generous, I'm a self-centered man. My greatest proof of friendship is to resist to the last some friend's plea, but I'm convinced that to acquiesce would be to contribute to that friend's injury. It's like wrapping your arms around your best friend and doing your best to hold him back when he has lost his cool and he wants to brawl. You're generous because you involve risk and force. It's a matter of moral and religious duty. I must know when to flee and when to fight. Paul told Timothy, flee also youthful lust, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. I cannot hum and haw. A thing is either honorable or dishonorable. It is either prudent or imprudent. It is either generous or selfish. Therefore, it must be yes or no with me. That character alone is acceptable with God, for he that wavereth is like the wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. But let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable. faithful in all his ways. If it is wrong, I have a duty to say no. It isn't whether or not I feel like it, or the customs of the locality permit it, or that popular opinion may solicit it. It's simply this, what I know to be right, or what I know to be wrong. Now, my refusal must spring from duty alone. My obligation toward my God and my fellow man, say no, when it is your duty to say no. Are you solicited to engage in any pursuits or to enter into any engagements which your conscience rejects or which you foresee will stain your character? Thou shalt say no. Are you pressed to grant favors or indulgences to persons who have no right to ask them or who can only be injured by them? Thou shalt say no. Are you importuned to join in amusements, to consent to customs which you believe will sully the purity of your character, or lessen the weight of your influence, or in any manner exert a mischievous effect on your community? Thou shalt say no. Let the consequences be what they may, thou shalt say no. Now your reward will be to have always a conscience, void of offense toward God and toward man. And in a better world, your course of firm, consistent, undeviating rectitude will have the applause of angels, and thank God, the welcome of his Son. So many need help in this service. It isn't easy to stand and say no in the midst of push and sales pitch of every kind. It takes strength in the inner man, but we know where to acquire that strength. Right here at the long, long altar. So head toward this great altar of blessing in the next.